Always fun and informative program when the folks from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection stop by. And today, I bet, is not going to be any exception to that rule. Sandy Chalmers, one of our guests, administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have you back, Sandy. Thank you for coming by.
Good morning, Larry.
And Michelle Reinen. Michelle directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And Michelle, always great to see you. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks, Larry. Fun to be here.
One of the, and we should, I want to give the numbers right away. If you have questions or comments, maybe there's a scam, or maybe you may have experienced one or wonder about one, number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Sandy, one of the projects for the Bureau of Consumer Protection is to compile an annual list of the top consumer complaints. And what data, well, how do you collect that?
Well, this is something we've done every year for a couple of decades, probably. But we do it for a couple of important reasons. First of all, it gives us important information about what's happening out there in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Not only fraud, but how business practices are changing. And second, By giving this to consumers, they can see what's happening to other people in the state, and that better prepares them to keep away from fraud, you know, because it's fraud is everywhere in today's society, unfortunately.
Goodness knows, and you folks process thousands of consumer complaints, right?
We do. This last year, we received over 11,000 consumer complaints about a variety of topics. And staff are the ones who receive those, analyze those complaints. They code them all by that topic and category so we can come up with this information. They code them by the category and then what the issues and problems that we see are, and then by company as well.
Do most people call, or is it they go online, or do we have that?
Yeah, it's a combination.
Yeah.
Some people are more comfortable submitting an online complaint, but our hotline number is frequently used. Seems like elderly people like to talk to a live person.
Yeah.
They're more comfortable that way. But the important thing is that it's all dumped into a database, and then we can analyze it, as Michelle explained.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking back to 2013 when we were, you know, you guys were on in 2013 to talk about this. And have we got similar complaints on that list? What about number one?
Well, the number one complaint we received was telemarketing.
And oh, well, that was number one last year.
That has been number one ever since the Do Not Call law was passed in this state. It's extremely annoying and frustrating to get these calls, and everyone gets them. And I guess if you look at what's changed and what's new, the numbers have increased steadily over time. Technology has really made it so easy for criminals sitting anywhere in the world to blast out hundreds of thousands of calls a day at a very low cost. But the types of fraudulent calls have been changing. And probably the most common complaint we received in the last year was about these IRS imposter calls.
Oh, yes.
There have just been an explosion of those calls. And they can take different formats. But they always threaten to take some kind of immediate enforcement action against you unless you give them your credit card immediately over the phone. What we recommend to people is that they hang up on those calls immediately. Sometimes it can be a little scary because nobody wants to get crossways with the IRS. But criminals know that. They know people are vulnerable to that in that way. So they're using it as leverage to steal from you.
Wow. So that's the worst one.
I would say that was the most common complaint we got. The second most common was another call that many of your listeners have received, this Microsoft tech support call, where somebody says, I'm from Microsoft, I need to take over your computer right now using remote access. Oh, I see a really bad problem, so if you pay me $100, I can fix it for you right away. That's another fraudulent call that has really exploded over the last year or two.
We have a lot of callers online, and I think what's probably going to happen is some of the calls are going to reflect some of the other lists or some of the other mentions on the list. Mary in New Berlin's up first. Mary, hi.
Well, hi, Larry. Yeah, I had a question for the gals. Our son called us Collect, and we accepted the call. The company was called 3G Collect, and they emailed me the price, which was $15.99, and I paid it by check to a company in New York with a post office box. Unfortunately, I didn't keep the post office box number, but I paid the bill, and now this 3G Collect keeps texting me and voicemailing me with more and more and more money. And I tried to get a hold of them. There's no phone number. There's no email that I can call. So I was just wondering if the gals knew anything about this company.
Huh.
I can't say sitting here that I've heard of 3G Collect, but like Sandy mentioned, we keep all this information in a database, so we may have received other complaints. What I'd encourage you to do, since you're not able to contact them and you've kept your receipt and your form of payment copy,
right,
is to file a complaint with our agency, and we can help step in and communicate and see if we can locate them and get them to stop contacting you for what we would probably consider at this point some fraudulent billing practices if they're trying to bill you for things that services you haven't asked for or received. So 1-800-422-7128 is the number you can call our hotline and get a complaint form mailed to you, or go online at datcp.wi.gov and fill out a complaint online or download a form.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, that's one I haven't heard about. There's always new ones, aren't there? Let's go to Steve in Waterford. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. See, I had a question on a different venue here that's controlled under the Agriculture Trade Consumer Protection. I was an expert witness on a court case one time between a homeowner and a contractor. And he lost the case based on an unknown rule that I was unaware of at the time. It's there's a law that talks about, I think it's A100 or something, that talks about the exact information that has to be in a legal contract to protect the consumer. And because the guy didn't follow the rules of that law, he actually lost the case.
Now, wait a minute. The consumer lost the case, you're saying?
No, the contractor.
Oh, the contractor.
Because there are some specific information that has to be on a legal contract in the state of Wisconsin that's enforced by the Agriculture Trade Consumer Protection. Nobody really knows about it that I've ever found out, because I've talked to many people that have never, you know, known these requirements. It talks about the contents of the contract, the name of the individual fulfilling the preparing the contract, and a number of other issues that this attorney picked on one issue and said the contract was null and void because the contractor didn't follow the rules of the Agriculture Trade and Consumer Protection.
Ah. Well, Michelle, do you know anything about this?
I think I do. We have a number of administrative rules that we enforce for a variety of different industries. That's part of our responsibility, is to put a level playing field out there. And I think what he's talking about would be our ATCP 110. It's a home improvement contractor code that says for all contractors that have written contracts, you have to have all this specific information that's clearly disclosed to the consumer, so they know how to act, know exactly what they'll be getting in place. And like I said, we have it for a variety of different industries under different codes, administrative codes. So we do a lot of training with the different home improvement
businesses?
Chapters, yep, through their associations through this last year. And the rule changed, actually, in June of this last year, 2014, because we're always trying to update and keep it current with technology and business practices. And we did some recent training over the last summer and fall. But ATCP 110, that's something we have a brochure on. If you go to our website, you can see a variety of brochures on all these different administrative rules and topics.
And you actually do training, as you said, for people, anybody who wants it, really.
We do. We are out in the public doing outreach for consumers on their rights. We train business and industry on the different topics that regulate them, and those associations and consumers can make requests through our hotline to have these presentations done.
Okay. So there you go.
Yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, it'd be beneficial for all contractors to know about this because there's so many of them, obviously, and they just are unaware of it, and it could bite them. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call. I want to give Joan and Rudolph a chance to join us. Joan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Say, I was wondering, I purchased a vehicle, a used vehicle, from a dealership, and I'm also calling because a family purchased one from a different means, through a private citizen. And so within days of those purchases, we both received stuff scam mailed, you know, that your warranty is expiring. You know, they make the letter look like it's official and stuff. But where are they getting this information from? Because I've opted out on my, you know, through the registration people, opted out that information that I don't want it to go to third parties. But within days of those purchases, we started getting this stuff in the mail. Where are they getting this information from?
Yeah.
It's hard to know specifically, but there could be a variety. You mentioned one, opting out of registration under public records law. I think that different marketing companies can purchase registration information from the Department of Transportation under the laws. But then there could also be potentially other ways, whether it be if you had to take out a loan, banks, different lead generators that come from that source of information that are always out there trying to do this direct marketing and returning and selling these lists to different companies or scammers potentially that are trying to target people on purchasing warranties or whatever it might be that they're selling. So if you ended up taking out a loan or anything that got submitted to someone else that may in turn have sold it. So it's really important to know all the privacy details behind information when you hand it over, and it can be a big multiplier.
Yeah. So this
there
one.
There were no other people involved. It was both were cash transactions. One was through a dealership and one was through a private person.
So it probably had to go through the Department of Transportation, to be perfectly honest, I would think.
Yeah, Joan, I think I spoke to your state representative about this yesterday, the woman who represents that area in the state legislature. But I wanted to talk a little bit about these quote-unquote extended warranty offers, because we do have some cases against these companies. Because they make it look like it's a letter from the government or from the car manufacturer, and it's not an extended warranty at all. What they're selling is a service contract, which may or may not be beneficial to you. So it's really important to read the fine print on those offers. And if you believe when you get one of those offers in the mail, if you believe there's something misleading about it, be sure to file a complaint with us, and we'll follow up on that. Because, quite frankly, a lot of people have been ripped off and have bought something they didn't really need.
Mm. Emma, thank you for calling, Joan. And she mentions, you know, it has to do with automobiles. If I think the number of complaints went down a little bit, didn't they, last year from... Or am I mistaken?
No, for motor vehicle sales, those numbers to our agency did go down, and often those are referred to the Department of Transportation, so that true number for the state would come from them, but we would often get complaints as a result of that. Our motor vehicle repair number stayed pretty consistent. It made the top 10. It usually does, because that can be a pretty big chunk of change out of the annual budget to maintain a vehicle in Wisconsin. And it's a one-on-one relationship often, and can be high emotion if something's going wrong there. So we do see a number of complaints in that area.
Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Finding out about the top consumer complaints of 2014, and certainly answering your consumer questions as well, with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Number to call, and we have an open line here, so we'll get you on fairly quickly, at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. Dan in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Dan. Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay. Need your thoughts on this past week. I've received 3 phone calls, and it's an electronic voice, a female voice. And I'll paraphrase basically what it's less than a minute or so. But it's apparently that 2 charges have been filed against me in my county, and looks like fraudulent activity has been attached to my Social Security number and my name. And they give me a case number. She gives me a case number. And it said, I need to speak to somebody in their legal department. And they need to make me aware of my legal rights about the charges that have been filed against me, and that if I fail to, I guess, find out my legal rights and I am served papers, my rights will be forfeited. And that's pretty much the method, I mean, the message. And they give me a phone number, and it's a 314 phone number. It's out of St. Louis, I guess. And the first 2 phone calls, it must be looped or something, because the first 2 calls I got, part of the phone number was cut off, the phone number that I'm supposed to return the call to. And it was a little bit different on each one. I don't remember what that seems to me. It was a different number, but I don't remember because I erased it. I didn't have the phone number. I was going to call back anyway. But the last one I got, which was yesterday, I got the full phone number, and I haven't called them back. But I'm just wondering what you think about this.
Well, that's a great example of how sophisticated some of these fraudulent phone calls have gotten. A lot of them threaten some kind of legal action if you don't pay immediately. And we had, for example, an IRS imposter phone call that was going around the state not too long ago, where they said, if you don't pay immediately, settle your tax obligation, you will lose your driver's license. And then the victim would receive a second call from somebody claiming to be from the DMV, and their caller ID would say DMV. So just be very, very skeptical of these calls. They've gotten really, really sophisticated. The criminals know how many people have been involved in data breaches right now, and they're using that vulnerability that people have as leverage.
So the long and the short of it is, don't call them back.
No.
Oh, okay, that would be my question then. All right, well, I want to thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Dan. Appreciate your call. Let's give Nikki in Green Bay a chance to join in. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, thank you so much. So I've called recently in the last month here 2 different companies. One was insurance, and the other one was actually a cable company. So that really had nothing to do with it. But it seemed like their phone number got hijacked. I would call with a question or a problem or whatever, and instead of getting the company, I received notice that I was one of the, 100th caller or whatever, and so I got something awesome, and it went to somebody who told me I had, this wonderful prize, and I just had to give my credit card number, and I kept telling them, no, I'd like to speak with the company I had originally intended, and they just refused over and over and finally hung up, called back again, same thing happened. What do I do in that kind of instance?
Boy. That is strange.
That is. I've heard the reverse a lot, where it's spoofing and a number appears on the caller ID that a scammer's really on the phone, but it looks like it's your insurance company calling. So when you receive the call, you think it's a legitimate business. But for you to call a number, is there a form that you can email them your question and communication, or a direct number to an agent or something, and ask them about this, because maybe they've given up that number and it's part of something else. But if there's another form of direct communication, you can try with them. But I wouldn't engage in that. That's very odd.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was strange. And I did. I circumvented that phone number to get a different number. But then a few days later, I just tried it out to see, and that phone number was legit again. So it was a very odd experience, that's for sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Very, very strange. Well, thank you for letting us know about that, Nikki. Appreciate it. And Michelle and Sandy are making little notes of the on that one, because that's unusual.
One thing I have heard, Larry, is that criminals will take numbers like take the Medicare number, the hotline number, and change one digit and then use that. So it's possible, if it's a big insurance company, that somebody has done that, taken that number, changing one digit. So if anyone misdials, they can use that as an opportunity.
Mm. Brian in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Thanks, Larry. It's a great program. It's really appropriate timing for me. Just this morning, in the mail, my 12-year-old daughter got an AARP membership card application. Huh. So I'm very worried about her identity possibly being stolen in some capacity. How do I find that out, and what should I do to protect her?
Okay. Michelle, what do we do?
Well, one of the first things you'll want to do is try and get a credit report for your daughter. So there's many avenues. You would contact the credit reporting agency and request that you receive a credit report. Ask that they do a manual search, so they're just searching the number, not the name and number together. And if you go online, they tell you the procedure for requesting that for children. Then another tool you may want to use once you examine that report, if it seems clean, is to put a security freeze on. Wisconsin last year passed a law that allows parents to put security freezes on their children's credit report. And that means if one doesn't exist with the credit reporting agency, that they create one and then lock it down. So that way, extensions of credit can't be given out in your daughter's name or using her social security number. If you find information where there could be a potential identity theft, contact our agency so we can assist you in doing that victim recovery on identity theft, because you'll also want to contact the Social Security Administration, and there'll be a lot of extra work there. But keep monitoring that information once a year, running that credit report to make sure nothing shows up, any bank accounts that you may have in her name, and look for these goofy mailings. And in all honesty, there could just be a mailing list that has her name on it where she got a piece of mail, but it's a good idea to have a heightened alert and be watching out for this.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Kendra in Downing, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My granddaughter bought a car. She's young and naive, and they sold her a warranty. The car was a lemon. Her and her dad brought the car back, and they wanted to pay the car off, but they didn't want to pay the warranty. They refused to take the payment. They left the car there. Then the place sued my granddaughter for $5,000, so now she's making payments on this car she doesn't even have. I'm wondering if she has any rights to go back there and get the car or get a car or...
Boy, that sounds...
She bought the car from a dealer in Wisconsin?
No, it's a fly-by-night Somerset Auto, and they have a reputation for selling bad cars. The car was a lemon, and they didn't
Okay, so that should be a registered auto sales location in Wisconsin if it's a business. So I would contact the Department of Transportation Motor Vehicle Dealer Unit, and hopefully they can assist you through whatever laws they have in place there. Because if you sell cars in Wisconsin, then you need to work with the Department of Transportation.
Yeah.
Okay. And find out about the VIN number, and maybe they can get the car back to her, and at least she can possibly sell it herself and put it towards what they sued her for, huh?
Yeah,
they'll be able to. Their dealer investigators will hopefully be able to work with you on resolution.
Okay, thank you so much. Great program.
All right, thanks, Kendra. And Susan in Mount Pleasant, thank you for... Oops, let's see. Wrong one. There we go. Susan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've recently read, or I'm in the middle of reading, Catch Me If You Can by Frank Abagnale, and he's got a book, I'm not reading that, I'm reading a book by him, and it's on identity theft, and he says that if your Social Security number is stolen, you may all of a sudden start getting all sorts of bills that are actually real bills that someone else has stolen in your name, and so you can't just ignore phone calls or something, because potentially someone really is charging things up on your ID. So in that case, he recommends, starting to put a lock on your credit report, or at least taking a look at your credit report and to see if someone has stolen your ID.
Yeah. You're shaking you're nodding yes to that.
Sure, Susan's absolutely right. We really encourage consumers to three times a year pull one of their three credit reports and monitor it throughout the year. Make sure the information's valid. A great tool to help you safeguard your information is to put a security freeze on your credit report, so that way extensions of credit and other activity don't occur with the use of your Social Security number.
Very good. Thank you, Susan. Ralph in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. If I may ask two questions, Larry. One is, does the ladies in the department they represent for state government, can they tell me if a complaint against a public utility is handled by them, or would that be through the PSC?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yes, exactly. Electric company, phone company, is that a complaint about things against a public utility apply through the PSC or through the consumer group?
That's a difficult question to answer without knowing the specifics. We look at the laws and refer a complaint based on which state agency has jurisdiction over that specific issue. Sometimes they kind of cross jurisdictions, but we do work very closely with the other agencies that have consumer-related laws. So you could call our hotline number and explain the details, and we would help you with where to go to have that issue resolved.
Okay.
Okay. And one other question, if I can ask, what is considered a final disposition by your department for a complaint? I mean, how are they answered? Like, it's been satisfied, or what's the specific, can give me an example of a determination, whether it's negative or whatever?
Sure, we have a different coding for that disposition. It's how the complaint was resolved. So mediation adjustment, where the company offered to resolve it for a credit, a refund, whatever that might be. No adjustment, where they're not willing to budge. And so a consumer may have to take the case to small claims court or private legal action if they want to pursue it, because we are not judge and jury at the agency. And if we move a case forward for investigation, it's on behalf of the state of Wisconsin and the citizens, not individuals. We can't take action on individual complaints for that consumer. We could send warning letters that tells a company that we see that there are violations of an administrative rule or statute, and there's a variety of codes like that we use to explain how complaints are closed and resolved in our office.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Elena next in Madison. Hi, Elena.
Hi. This like someone else said, this is a timely topic.
Yeah.
So cell phone carriers, do they fall under your jurisdiction for complaints?
Yeah, they do. Certain areas involving telecom, mostly what we have jurisdiction over are billing issues and contractual issues.
Okay, that's perfect. Having an issue with a major carrier that I'll not name, where we had a data plan that suited our needs. It's very low. We don't use a lot of data on our phones. We're not teenagers. And multiple times we kept going over, but never being told how much we were going over, and then incurring this fee for them to add another gigabyte or whatever it was of data, only to find out just a few weeks ago that they discontinued our plan months ago, like maybe all the way back into September or October, and changed it to a plan that was up by that one gig or meg, whatever it was, and never told us. But we're charging us for rolling over on that old plan, sometimes by as much as like less than a gig or less than, like less than one, and charging us for a full one, even though that would have been our plan. Does that make sense?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
That's something that we would like to hear from you about, and we follow up on these kinds of issues on a regular basis for consumers. But if you have a copy of the contract or any communications you've received from your cell phone carrier, that would be really helpful for us to review. But we would contact on the company on your behalf and look for any potential violations of state law.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll be sending that off.
All right. Good enough. Thanks, Elena. Heather in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I'm actually calling. It wasn't a phone call I got. It was a letter in the mail, but it was from this company, Apne Collection.
Okay.
And it was, like, for money, like $4,000 that... For, it was supposedly an AT&T account that I had had, and I've never had AT&T in my lifetime.
No. So you're wondering, what do we do here, Michelle?
Yeah.
Two things. Collections and collection agencies, fraudulent collections, are handled by the Department of Financial Institutions. So you'd want to file a complaint with that agency, and you could go online and look how to do that or call our 800 number, and they'll give you a phone number and assist you in doing that. The other thing is, because it was in your name through a company, AT&T, I'd, if you haven't recently, run a credit report and make sure their AT&T doesn't show up as a creditor on there, and that someone isn't using your information and has an account open in your name there. Those are always indicators to check your credit history and your identity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually called AT&T, and they don't have any record of that.
That's great.
That's good.
That's another step. I'd still run that credit report, because it might be your Social Security number with someone else's name. So I'd just do a double check. There are different forms of identity theft, and just to feel real confident about it.
Got it. Good luck, Heather. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And we're on to Steve in West Allis next. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Okay, so this is a little complicated. So for our wedding, one of the presents we received from our father-in-law was a brand new driveway and patio.
Okay.
It's very nice. Okay, so about 6 months afterwards, we get a notice of lien on the house from the cement company.
Oh.
Because the contractor never paid them. My argument to the cement company is, I never hired anybody to do work on my house. I never hired these people. I signed no contracts.
Okay. So it was your father-in-law that paid for it. So
yeah,
if they were going to go after anybody, it would be the father-in-law.
Well, they should go after the contractor who didn't pay off his bills. He bounced on like 10 companies.
Oh.
Yeah. But I never hired anybody. How can they put a lien on my house? I didn't hire him.
Yeah, that gets into Wisconsin lien law and the fact that work was done on your property, regardless of who may have contracted with the contractor to do the work. So that is all lien law, which we don't have regulation over. We have regulation over the contractor and what happened there. So if your father paid, you know, for the wedding gift, which was to hire the contractor, and he went about that and made the payments, and now these liens are happening, I'd encourage him to file the complaint with our agency so we can see if it's a pattern of conduct and we can get involved with that administrative code that regulates that and make sure there isn't some theft happening there.
Yeah.
And then what area covers the lien law? What department?
That's a privately enforced situation where you'd need to consult with an attorney. But the way that liens play into our consumer aspect of it is we encourage consumers, whenever they make payments, to request and receive a lien waiver from the contractor upon making that payment. And the law states that a contractor needs to inform a consumer that they have a right to these lien waivers. But they don't have to turn them over unless the consumer asks for them. So it's really important that the consumers ask for these lien waivers so they have proof of payment, and these other subcontractors can't then come after you for payments.
Mm-hmm. There we
and
go.
Actually, the cement company gave me a waiver because they agreed with me.
They went after the contractor
and eventually, yeah. But I just was always curious about how that all
worked.
Yep. I'd still encourage you, your father, to file that complaint because it still shows to me what I'm hearing, that mm-hmm. there is a potential problem out there with that contractor.
There we go. Thanks very much for that call. I appreciate it very much. We have George in Burlington next. Hi, George. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm calling on behalf of my daughter. She had, and I don't mind naming the carrier, AT&T. She bought into a plan for four or five cell phones at a real good monthly rate. Girl promised her a low rate. And when she got her first bill, it was like twice as much as what was promised. So she called to complain, and AT&T listened to the recording of the representative and said, yeah, our representative did quote you a lower price, but you signed the contract for a higher price, and so we expect you to abide by the contract. So my daughter sent the cell phones back to him, and they sent her a bill for about $1,400 because of reneging on four or five phones. I have five grandkids, so there's seven in that family.
Wow. So, Sandy or Michelle, Sandy, you want to say something about it?
AT&T has a lot of customers in this state. They have a lot of happy customers, and we hear from the ones with problems. And what we do is look at any documentation you can provide in terms of a contract or emails, any communication that you receive from the company, and we will contact them on your behalf and try to get this ironed out. There are a lot of people have cell phones. It's a huge issue. Everybody has internet. So we have a lot of disputed billing issues.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And, you know, here we've had quite a few calls relating to cell phones. I know you guys have had some success dealing with cell phone companies, have you not? Or at least U.S. Cellular?
We have. Telecommunications was in our top 10 last year. It went up by over 30%. And as Sandy said, everyone seems to carry around a cell phone, have internet. So it's a high-volume industry where we're going to see complaints. There's a lot of happy people. Well, in this last year, U.S. Cellular put in place a new billing system, and it probably didn't go as smoothly as they hoped, and we ended up with a lot of consumers with billing problems and disputes that filed with our agency, over 300, and we were able to assist them in getting more than $18,000 back in credits, refunds, and billing adjustments there. So you know, they were very cooperative with us along the way, and we did look to see, was this just a implementation problem, or was there some intent or things going on through our investigation? And we didn't, you know, find any evidence of wrongdoing there. So
okay.
Those consumers were made whole.
And the number of, you know, you'd almost expect the number of complaints in this area to increase, given the fact that, you know, we've got 10, 11-year-old kids even with cell phones these days. You know, they're ubiquitous, and they're just tens of thousands more than there even 5 years ago, I would guess.
Right, and there are so many carriers now that will bundle services,
yeah.
And that can be really confusing and for consumers, and a lot of billing issues, many, many hundreds of billing issues every year we handle.
Talking today about consumer protection issues with our guests Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at consumer complaints with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Lots of callers online, every line filled right now. Jack and Duran, thank you for waiting. It's your turn.
Hi, Larry. Say, reason I'm calling, I have a mortgage. About once a month I get a call from a mortgage broker, a woman, claiming that she's calling to help me save money, and she knows I have a mortgage. I tell her, I'm not interested in a mortgage. Take me off your list. I'm on the do not call list. And I tell her, you're telemarketing me. Her retort is, there is no list. I'm working with a mortgage broker, so I'm not a telemarketer. And I started arguing, well, you're calling me, you're a telemarketer. And then but I've done this over and over for at least 12 times. And she keeps calling again and again and then claims she's never remembered talking to me before. It's really annoying. I don't know what to do.
Oh, all right. What are we going to do, Sandy?
Okay, well, that I would really appreciate it if Jack would file a complaint and let us know the details, the company name, the name of the woman who's calling him. If he has a phone number from the caller ID, that would be helpful. We have taken enforcement action within the last year or so against a couple of mortgage companies in the state who have been violating the state do not call list. So I want your listeners to know that we take that law very seriously and we follow up on every complaint we receive. And if we find companies here in the state that are violating the law, we will take enforcement action. And we have and will continue to ask for forfeitures in the, you know, in the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars against these companies who violate state law.
So there you go. Thanks, Jack.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
You know how to do this?
Yeah. No.
All right. We'll get you. We've got a phone number we can go to,
yeah,
for one thing.
There's a toll-free hotline number you can call, and the number is 1-800-422-7128. And you can also file a complaint online by going to our website, datcp.wi.gov.
Okay, so that was 422-7128?
Right.
Yep, 800.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot. Charlie in Monona, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Well, the last call was a good segue to my question. I'm getting several phone calls from, my wife and I are both on the no-call list, but we're still getting calls. I went to the website to file a complaint online, and I would just like to comment that is there a less onerous way that a file or a complaint can be filed? Because it seems like a big job to ask a consumer to fill out a fairly lengthy form. Would it be something you could do is just gather numbers, email addresses, and phone numbers, something real quick that a consumer could do rather than go through the extreme measure of filling out what seems to be a fairly long form on the web?
Charlie, we hear you, and we're working on it. So we have the original form out there, and it is long. We ask that you fill out as much of it as you can, and if you don't have it, skip that box and just move on and give us the information you do have so we can move. You can file a complaint by sending us an email with your information because we need your phone number. We need to know the source of where that call landed, and then whatever you have about that company. But we are working on a express form where you don't have expectations that we're going to communicate back with you, and you can just let us know what's going on, and then another version of that as well. But it's a work in progress. We hope to see it sometime this year.
There you go.
Great job.
All right. Thanks, Charlie, for calling. Appreciate it. You know, we had Joanne contact us and ask about the massive data breach of Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. You guys have any update on that or what's going on with that, Sandy?
Well, that is huge. It involves tens of millions of current and former Anthem customers. Watch the news carefully for updates. What I've seen most recently is a confirmation from Anthem that it will be contacting its current and former customers by mail. And when these other big data breaches over the last couple of years, we've seen fraudulent emails and telephone calls follow after the data breach, and a lot of people have, you know, gotten into more trouble through that. So just remember that any phone call you receive or any email you receive that looks like it's from Anthem is not. It's from a crook, and Anthem will contact you through postal mail.
Jean in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah. First, I wanted to say that I had a similar call about a lawsuit against me and saying that I must call my attorney by 5 p.m. that night because the person suing me was unwilling to wait any longer and it was going to be in court and I have nobody suing me. But just wanted to add that to the person that said he had some sort of legal phone call. Mm-hmm. And I just ignored it. But my issue today is about an email I received, and it was dated 2/9, and it ostensibly came from FedEx, but I don't believe it was because I'm not expecting any package. And it says, "Jean, courier was unable to deliver the parcel with an ID number. It's from Church WE at box773bluehost.com. And it says, we could not deliver your item. Delivery label is attached to this email. Regards, Reginald Joseph, FedEx operation agent. And there is an attachment with a number, and it's a zip attachment of 1.9 kilobytes. And I didn't open it or anything. I just called my son and said, does this sound like a scam? And he said, yeah. So have you heard of this before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I've seen a FedEx truck go past my house since then. It hasn't stopped.
There you go.
Yeah, those delivery scams usually pop up around Christmas time when a lot of people are expecting packages. But the rule of thumb there is whenever you receive an email that's unexpected with an attachment, be very, very suspicious. And if you can run it through your antivirus software, great. But
it has already gone through it.
Yeah, that's good. I know in our home email account, we've been receiving a lot of these kinds of emails. Some look like they're from our internet provider, but they all contain attachments, and I know better than to try to open them.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Nancy in Grafton. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good morning. I had a sore knee. Went to the doctor, got a prescription. Well, this morning I get a phone call from U.S. Compounding Pharmacy, and I could hardly understand the person down in Florida. And she said that they'd send me a jar of some kind of salve. There's five ingredients in it. It's $9.99. My insurance would pay for it. And how in the world would somebody in Florida get the idea that, you know, I've got a sore knee? And So I called the pharmacy at the where I got this prescription, and anyway, he said he doesn't know anything about this, and I gave him the phone number that that woman gave me, and he said he's going to call and see if he can get a hold of him. But I never, how in the world would somebody in Florida, and they, yeah, your insurance will pay for it. I said, this is a workers' comp thing. I don't even know who the company is. I just thought that was kind of scary in a way. How in the heck would somebody way down in Florida know that I got a sore knee?
Well, they've got a long telescope in there. No. You know, I suppose if the doctor, did you say the doctor prescribed?
Yeah.
Are you so maybe, I don't know. What
yeah,
do you think?
It's hard to know because there's with insurance companies and information and submittals and payments, and there is some sharing amongst pharmaceutical companies when things are prescribed. So that could be a source through that sharing of information. And it's just really important to always ask questions when you go places and hand over information, who's your information shared with. And you may want to call your insurance company and ask them if they share your information with others in their inner circle or, you know, their vendors and things to help maybe pinpoint other solutions for you. But I think it's great to be cautious and not engage and go back to your sources of information to ask the questions.
You're not with Blue Cross, are you?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. It had to come from somewhere. There's obviously, they just didn't suddenly realize Nancy's knee was sore and send her that information. So it had to come somehow with the ordering of the or with the information about the medication she was receiving.
That's the guess.
That's your best guess. And by golly, we're going to be doing this right up until 12:30 today. We've got lots of great calls ahead here. Our guests today, Sandy Chalmers is administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Renan directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Join in at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Back with our guests right after the news. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at consumer issues today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Ryan. And Sandy is administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Ryan directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have you both with us. And we, you know what, we have lots of callers, so let's go right to the phones. And Kathy Lynn in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy Lynn.
Hi, this is Kath Lynn, but that's all right. I have a problem with AT&T and have had this problem now for over a year. None of my monthly statements are the same. For instance, in November, I got a bill. My statement said my previous balance was $1,301.10. And then the payment said thank you and the $1,300 and blah, blah. And then it said balance zero, total amount due $460.59. Then now my next bill, my last bill, had the $460 and paid $200-some, but the balance due now is $460. Oh, and it said I had paid the $240 and whatever. But then it came out the new charge was $203.40. So on the service summary, the account charge was $12.02. The UVerse TV was $101.20. The Uber's voice was $34.80, and the wireless was $312.57, which made, of course, the total new charge $460.59. But there was nothing about my payment of 200 something.
Oh.
Until it said the payment adjustment, payment by check posted 11/22, $229.39 credit. Direct pay posted December 2nd, $425.93, which was a credit.
You know, we're having a hard time. I'm really having a hard time following along with you on this one, Kathleen. Is there the upshot of this is it sounds like you're getting the bill is not accurate.
To say the least.
Yeah, okay. Well, now, what do we do to what does Kathleen do to resolve this?
Well, you know, we'd encourage consumers to call AT&T and ask them about their bill, but this seems really complicated with all these numbers and everything, so putting some stuff in writing to AT&T would be good. I encourage Kathleen to file a complaint with our agency. She can call the hotline, and they can, you know, help her file that complaint by sending a form out. 1-800-422-7128, and we're going to need copies of those bills and for her to just tell us the summary of what's happening there, and we'll contact AT&T.
So again, that number is 1-800-422-7128, so you can call and make a complaint. You'll get a form. She'll receive a form, and she can fill that form out, and then again have copies of the bills.
Right. And if she needs help, if a family member can help her fill out the form, and if no one's available, just let us know that, and we'll help fill out the form if no one is there to assist.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Good. Well, good luck, Kathleen. Thank you for calling, and I hope we can get this resolved for you. George and Madison up next. Hi, George.
What? Is that me?
Yes.
Well, actually, George left. My name's Kevin.
Oh, Kevin?
So I've got the question. We were talking about it. But what it's about is I've been listening here for quite some time, and my issue is about the home construction. And I heard other people talking about it and being advised people about liens and so forth. Well, it certainly expects the homeowner to know an awful lot about a business that a homeowner is not into. And in our situation, we had a contractor here in Madison that deceived the city, frankly, in building permits and got a citation for that. And we filed a complaint with the Wisconsin Consumer Protection about it, and nothing was done. Nothing could be done, and I don't put any fault on the people at the Consumer Protection there, because the laws have been so toothless that there's nothing you can do. And just recently, this past year, we learned, well, last year in 2014, that the Republican legislature even made those laws more toothless. So it's kind of like a name only. And if you mentioned, Larry, all the consumers is calling about all the problems. Well, the fact is the consumers don't really have much option to look to things.
Yeah.
But this thing with the home construction, and I've gone through home building and remodeling a number of times, and I tell you, it's really a crooked industry. And the Consumer Protection Office there cannot do a thing about it.
Well, I thank you for calling, and George, I can hear your frustration for sure. Oh, not George, it was Kevin, I think. No,
mm-hmm.
Comments from you, Michelle?
Well, I think we appreciate hearing the stories that don't end in success as much as we hear what consumers can do to help themselves, because we can learn from that. And I guess the best thing we can do right now, it doesn't help Kevin and George, but other consumers, this is a good time to remember to try and do your homework up front, take advantage of our fact sheets and brochures about all these topics before you enter into situations, and help us help you learn those laws and your consumer rights, and check out a business up front to see if we have any complaint history, reference checks, and all of that, so you can, going into a large money situation or a vulnerable situation, you have as much power as you can have it not being your everyday thing that you do. So that's why we released the top 10, so we can learn what other consumers experienced and really try and educate consumers beforehand of things to avoid those pitfalls.
And home improvement, for example, is number 6 on the list.
It is, and it's been in our top 10 for a number of years because it's a one-on-one relationship. It involves a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of complexity with, like he said, building permits, lien waivers, and contracts, law involved there, and a lot of money usually.
Yeah. George, I thank you very much for calling. I keep saying George. It's Kevin. Thanks so much for hanging in there and calling, and I'm glad we had a chance to at least respond. And it's difficult, even in a community. For home improvement, I think what maybe the safest, and even that might not always work, is to, if there are people that have done work in your neighborhood, and you go and talk to the people that had the work done and they're local people, I think that's about as good as you're going to be able to get.
Right, those reference checks and talking word of mouth advertising. It's an old fashioned form, but it's been around a long time for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again, George. Kevin, sorry. Oh, I have that name in front of me and I can't get it out of my head. Marion Keenan. Or Kennan, is it? Wisconsin?
Kennan.
Yeah, Kennan. Hi.
Hi. I received in the mail a letter from CashNet USA. $800 is waiting for me. I'm pre-approved. It comes out of Chicago. I never heard of this place. It's an installment loan. Their APR, annual APR, is only 301%, 349%. I've never heard of this.
Well,
but I have to call them and give them my checking account number.
No, don't do that.
Other personal information, because I will talk to a U.S.-based customer service rep if I call the number.
You will not. You will not, Mary.
That sounds pretty suspicious, and good job reading the fine print there on the APR, because obviously 309% is not a good deal.
Yeah, so that's one of those where you just don't even bother to respond to them. We had an interesting, and I think we've talked about this one other time on the phone, an email from Teresa. My husband and I rehabbed a house in Wausau, which is currently listed for sale with a local realtor. Someone has listed it for rent on Craigslist and have actually represented themselves using our names. They claim to be the owners, who are currently out of state or country. They have used the pictures from the MLS listing and offer it for a very reasonable amount. Those who have inquired have been instructed to look into the windows. If they like it, they need to send a security deposit and the first month's rent, at which time they'll receive the keys. Please advise renters, if it's too good to be true, it is, and never rent sight unseen.
Yeah, that kind of Craigslist fraud has gotten to be very, very common. And usually the red flags are just as Teresa explained here, where the owners say they're overseas and the rent is a too good to be true deal. So what we recommend is before you respond to a Craigslist ad, take the time to read through the latest tips that Craigslist offers under its I think a tab called fraud or FAQs or something like that, so you know what to watch for.
Hmm. Barbara in Franklin, it's your turn next. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, good morning. Hi.
Hi.
It's a common problem. Last summer, my husband's identity was stolen. In making a credit card with Sears. It happened at the Bayshore Sears store. Someone went in, opened a credit card on the spot, purchased a pair of shoes, and was able to purchase them. A month later, we get in the mail the bill and the credit card saying that we opened this. We immediately called Sears and stopped it. We were not liable for it, which was nice. Then we went through the freezing his identity and that whole thing, which was a pain, and called the police department, reported it. The few questions I have, first of all, why would someone be able to open an account and immediately make a purchase? That would have helped prevent it. When we found out it happened at Bayshore through Sears, they said, oh, possibly that was even on video, so they could have had evidence of the person. Another question I have, when somebody does open an account, if they have a fake driver's license, isn't that scanned into a system so they can see what the person looked like? So we're okay now. His credit is frozen, you know, and all yep. that. But are there no why does Sears allow them to purchase a pair of shoes right there on the spot, other than wanting to make a sale?
It happens all the time, actually.
Yeah, and why isn't there like a month waiting period or something? It's a shame. And then, bottom line, Sears supposedly could have had a video of this person doing it. They don't pursue it. We would love to know how they got his information that could prevent this person from doing damage elsewhere to other people.
Yeah.
And what laws, you know... We were so frustrated that the purchase was made on the very day the person filled out the paperwork.
Well, I've been in stores where I've asked, do you have our credit card? And I say, no, well, we can give you a card right now and you can charge right away.
Yeah, so get 20% off, 20 extra percent.
And get 20% extra off, that's right.
Right. It's a real promotional opportunity for that store to get that creditor. And that's one of the reasons why we really push the security freeze. It would block that theft from being able to occur. And unfortunately, in this situation, that was an after-the-fact piece of the puzzle. But for prevention for others, it's putting the freeze on now so that situation can't happen to them. And all the other questions that came out of that from you, Barbara, are a lot of evidentiary criminal investigation kinds of questions that we just can't answer here. It's more of the criminal law enforcement side of things, and I think it's beyond our authority or conversation area.
Yeah, and I thank you again for that call. Mitch in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Mitch.
You had something on somebody purchasing a lemon car on there, and there was also a program earlier about it on your radio station about a month ago. But they had, isn't there some kind of list on lemon cars that can protect you against those things?
Oh, so you mean a description of the car with a VIN and a VIN number and
right. Yeah, because they were commenting on that people were stuck with the deal to try and repair a lemon. At the same time, they almost couldn't afford the mortgage. It was a choice between paying the car payment or making a payment pay the mechanic to fix it.
Yeah,
I think one of the things you might be referring to is some of the services, pay for services that different dealers may use to entice. I think one of them, you know, not to promote any Carfax. We see a lot of commercials for that, and there's other ones out there that are just car histories that is a tool to use that you can maybe feel more confident in the history of the vehicle. But it comes down to do as much research as you can and how much confidence do you put into that different type of information. But those are things to consider when buying a used car.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, we have some more calls or some emails here. Just a few minutes ago, I received, this is from Ruth, an email list. I received a phone call as I was listening to your program. A young man saying he was our grandson asked for help, said he's been in an accident, had broken his nose. As we talked, he said his lip was also cut to his chin. He was at a party last night. His friend was speeding and arrested. He needs $2,000 for bail. When I acted as if I was very upset, he begged me not to tell his parents, gave me the number for the courthouse where he is when I offered to come right now to help him. This is the phone number, and she gives the phone number here. Could someone check on this now? I have not phoned this number yet. I thought I would contact you right now instead. We have 9 grandsons and 2 granddaughters. This young man said he was our favorite one. By the end, he was concerned about me being upset. He begged me not to call. Oh, boy. We've heard this one before.
Wow. Yeah. And interesting that she got it while she was listening to this show. That is the known as the grandparent scam, and it's been around for years. And unfortunately, people fall victim to that. And criminals know that seniors can be vulnerable to that play on their emotions, and nobody wants to think about their grandchildren in trouble or, you know, in jail and that kind of thing. So we do hear from people who are ripped off to the tune of, you know,
tens
of thousands of dollars. I'm glad that Ruth handled it as she did, and we'll follow up on that phone number and see what happens.
In the meantime, do not call that number.
Do not call that number. And please, if you have elderly friends, neighbors, relatives, make sure they know about this scam so they don't fall victim.
Yeah, there we go. And Katie, have you got a quick question for us from Ridgeway?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. It was really kind of a comment about that was relates to a previous caller talking about our consumer protection laws not having enough teeth in them. In our personal experience, we had put a roof on our home and had purchased shingles made from CertainTeed, which is a company that sells shingles nationwide and in Canada, and they were defective. And our roof started disintegrating, and when we made a claim with our homeowner's insurance, they denied the claim, saying they weren't going to cover it because the materials were defective. When we went back to CertainTeed, they were unwilling to help us and told us that they would apply a depreciation schedule to our roof, and after that was applied, the only thing they owed us was $250 to replace a defective roof. And I went to the Consumer Protection Agency in Wisconsin and was told there really wasn't much that could be done. And I also spoke with our Attorney General, J.B. Van Hollen, and he really wasn't interested in what was happening to us and said it was a tort reform issue. In the end, we ended up, CertainTeed had sent us a form saying if we signed it, releasing them from all liability and agreed never to sue them, would give us the $250 to replace our roof. Instead, I joined a class action lawsuit. CertainTeed was being sued by 17 states in the country and in Canada. And in the end, I received a $500 check to replace a $12,000 roof. And it just seems to me that our legislature has to address these issues because there were many, many consumers in Wisconsin, not just our family, who was affected by this company. And the details came out that they were willingly marketing these shingles after they knew they were defective.
And we are about completely out of time here, but in 15 or 20 seconds, comments?
that's a case we're very familiar with, and oftentimes there are those kinds of class action suits on those very large ones, and it is a very unfortunate situation because of the representation laws that were in place and are not having any ability to act in that case.
So. Yeah, it's frustrating for you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Katie, I'm sorry for that loss, which is a huge one. But I appreciate you calling and letting us know about it. That's how other people will be helped. Appreciate your call, and obviously appreciate Sandy and Michelle, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back again. You stay with us.